Good afternoon, everyone. I hereby call the meeting of the House Housing Committee to order. Lee Johnson, first order of business. Can we get approval of the minutes?
Chair Bajie, I will look over the minutes and I will make that motion.
Thank you so much. Lee Johnson moves that the minutes are approved. Seeing no discussion, all those in favor, say aye. All those opposed, and the motion passes. So this afternoon, we're actually going to be joined with two members who will give us kind of a brief presentation of housing issues in their areas. The first member that we have is former representative and current Roseau Mayor Dan Fabian. So I'd like to welcome Mayor Fabian to the floor. Thank you so much. We are just going to give some time, about maybe 10 or 15 minutes or so, for the presentations. And so, Mayor Fabian, when you are ready to present, you may. And I believe the page is also passing out the handout that you have for us. So the floor is yours. Welcome to the committee, Mr. Fabian.
Well, thank you. Thank you, Madam Chair. It's kind of fun to be back here again and doing this only on a different side of the table, you might say. So thank you for the opportunity. As the chair said, my name is Dan Fabian, and I am currently the mayor of Roseau, Minnesota, a town in the furthest northwest corner of the state. We're about 11 miles south of the Canadian border. We've got this little company up there that makes snowmobiles and ATVs called Polaris, and they've been in Roseau since 1954, and the reason I know that is because that was the same year I was born. They employ currently about 1,500 folks making snowmobiles, ATVs, and things for the military, which is pretty cool. And the reason I'm here today is to talk to you about market rate workforce housing. The issue that we face and the issue that other companies in northwest Minnesota face, such as Marvin Windows and Doors and War Road, which is about 22 miles to the west, east of us, and Thief River Falls, where they've got DigiKey and Arctic Cat / Textron, there's a critical shortage of market rate workforce housing. So what I'd like to try to lay out for you today very quickly, and maybe answer a question or two if you have, is why the market, the free market, doesn't work in much of rural Minnesota when it comes to workforce housing. And that's because the market rate, which is used to establish the value of the property when they do the appraisal, so on this handout that I gave you, in the bottom corner, you can see those red diagrams there. It gives you a little bit of an idea of what we had to do to make our 1101 project work, which is a apartment that has 37 units in it. And when it opened in early July this year, or early August, I'm sorry, I've forgotten, it had 37 units, and the units filled up in a month, okay? 80% of the people that moved into that building came from outside of the state of Minnesota. So they weren't moving there from other places within Minnesota. We're not rearranging the furniture on the deck. What we're doing is we're trying to get new furniture on the deck, and those are people that come to Roseau to work at either Polaris or our hospital, which is one of the top five critical access hospitals in the nation. Our school is just finishing up a new construction project, adding more classrooms and space and so forth. So we have a huge demand for housing in Roseau. When you do the appraisal on our $6.5 million project, it appraised for $4 million. And that's based on how much you charge for rent. And the average rent in Roseau on a two-bedroom apartment is $1,000. A three-bedroom is $1,100. So when you factor those things in, you can't cover the debt. So what we as a city had to do, and by the way, our city through our EDA owns this apartment building. As a mayor, I don't want to be in the housing business, okay? But we have to do some things so that Polaris and Marvin and so forth are not renting hotel rooms to put employees in short term. Then that impacts our tourism industry, which of course up there it has to do a lot to do with snowmobiling and hockey. Our hockey tournaments that used to have 8 and 16 teams, and we filled up hotels from Greenbush to War Road, now happen far less frequently and have far fewer teams because the hotel rooms are used up. So in that $6.5 million project, it appraised for $4 million, so now we have a $2.5 million gap. So as a city, we did the infrastructure the sewer, the water, and so forth to get to the apartment. We did a TIF, we did a tax abatement, we applied for a grant to Minnesota Housing Finance Authority through the Greater Minnesota Workforce Housing Grant Program, and we were able to secure a grant. And so working with D.W. Jones, we were able to get the project done. But without that money, it wouldn't have happened. We rejected bids in early 2021, because they were just so high, and that was kind of at the peak of all the construction costs being high and so forth. So what I'm asking you to do today to consider is for an infusion of money into that Greater Minnesota Workforce Housing Grant program. Is I've talked to Commissioner Ho, I've talked to other members, they're supportive of that. The governor came out with his budget yesterday. There was a base of $4 million in there, and he upped that to $44 million total, as I understand it. So that's kind of that's in a nutshell. You can take a look at some of those things on this handout that was put together by our City Community Development Coordinator, Todd Peterson, who does a great job on this. You can see the contribution that manufacturing makes to rural Minnesota and to the state of Minnesota in that blue box on the one side. So it's really something that's super important for us. And we're also trying to develop single housing units, you know, with regards to developing a residential area with infrastructure, sewer, water, electricity, curb and gutter, and all that sort of stuff. So.
Well, thank you, Mayor Fabian, for that presentation. I saw that one member had a discussion. Representative Nash, would you like to ask a quick question?
Thank you, Madam Chair. And Mr. Mayor, Representative, good to have you here. Good to see you, my friend. Appreciate the time that we spent fishing and talking about this after you became mayor. Waconia did some of the similar things. You have an expansion of your TIF time frame. Can you maybe address that from the time? I think you have it at 9 years, and you're asking to go to 25 years as well. Is that right?
Yeah, it gives us more flexibility. It boils down to flexibility and allowing local jurisdictions, local electeds, just like you have election certificate, I have one as well. It allows us to make the decisions that we think work best for the towns, in this case, in Roseau, that we represent, and that's why we're asking for that.
Representative Nash.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Well, I think I've heard from everyone on this committee that we all recognize that housing is not just a metro issue, that it's outstate as well. And having stayed at your home with you and your wife, driving around Roseau, and you did leave off one tourist attraction of fishing. So shame on you. I will be calling your tourism department. But I could tell that it was tough going up there. And I think that there are some things that all of us could do to maybe give you some more tools in the local toolkit. So I think that it's important. I know that those industries up there are literally begging you, because you had relayed that on the phone to me right after you'd been elected mayor, that it was just you felt like you had no tools in the toolkit. So I'm happy to help.
Thank you.
Put those there.
Thank you, Representative Nash. Any other member discussion? Seeing none, thank you so much, Representative Mayor Fabian. We really appreciate you being here.
Thank you. Appreciate your time.
Next on the list for another quick presentation, we have Mary Thompson from Hubbard County. Welcome to the committee. If you could please state your name and then briefly proceed with your presentation.
My name is Mary Thompson. I'm the executive director with Heartland Lakes Development Commission, which is the economic development entity for Hubbard County and the city of Park Rapids. We also manage the Hubbard County HRA. In your packets, you did have a slide presentation that I prepared, and it really is discussing the challenges of creating workforce housing in northern Minnesota and in particular small communities. I just want to point out, right now we are working on a specific project, which is started on slide 5, I believe. And it is with the expectation that we were going to use the Minnesota Workforce Housing Program to use that. There's four really strong stipulations for that program. One is that they can only use, you can only use 25%, use it for 25% of your total project costs. It requires local match of $1 for every $2 of resources that you receive. The match has to come from someone other than the developer, and you have to use prevailing wage. Thank you. And so the project that we are trying to pull off is 58 units in northern Minnesota and in the city of Park Rapids. The rents are exactly what my the previous speaker talked about, is $1,000 for a two-bedroom unit, which is really where we have to be. And we do also have a shortfall. However, if we use the Minnesota Housing Grant Program to pull this program off, it's going to be $1.7 million. If we use the costs with prevailing wage, it adds $707,000 to the cost, no different than the prevailing wage. And so that's one of the reasons why we have to ask for so much money. But the community now has to come up with required match of $875,000. Small communities really struggle coming up with those resources. TIF adds income restrictions, and so sometimes these housing units that we're talking about, if you're slightly over the income limit of about $45,000, you can't live this, or we have severe restrictions. And small communities don't necessarily have the economies of scale in order to make development work very well with this program. So while the program is very great, it does have some pretty significant barriers for small communities in northern Minnesota. And so I just want to point out that it is a really great program, and I do hope that you continue to fund it. But for small communities in northern Minnesota, it's a challenge.
Thank you very much for your presentation, Ms. Thompson. I also saw member discussion. Representative Nash, would you have something?
Yeah, thank you, Chair. To the testifier, I also fish in your area. I fish a lot of Hubbard County, particularly Potato Lake, and I'm not sure everyone knows just how much tourism goes through Park Rapids. And I know that there's a very solid barrel manufacturer there as well, and lots of people who are making things. And you know, I know that there's a lot of tourism activity that goes all the way up to Itasca, and that most of the people are doing commerce in the Park Rapids area, but you're trying to balance that out. Former Representative Fabian was talking about how quickly the apartments filled up, and I know there's camps and there's resorts and there's lots of people. How quickly would this project likely fill up if you were to get it off the ground and running?
Ms. Thompson.
The Hubbard County HRA did do two successful programs with the workforce housing program. We did it in a two-year span. The first one was 28 units. It filled within 3 months. The second group of apartments was another 28 units, and it was filled before it was finished. We have extreme waiting lists on those buildings all the time. It would be full within just a few months. What's happening with our employers is that they have jobs, they offer the positions, and then the person will accept contingent on finding housing and cannot find it. We have a 1% vacancy rate. So it is impossible for anyone to find housing. As a result, what's happened is our small employers have had to succumb to reduced hours, closing, and some of them have actually closed because they cannot find the workers in order to keep going. We are a resort community. Park Rapids has a population of less than 4,000. We're one of five communities in Hubbard County, and we have a population of 21,000. We're highly resort, but we also do have manufacturing, a lot of agricultural manufacturing. Lamb Weston has one of their French fry manufacturing facilities in our community. We have a lot of artisan type employers. And we also have a very high population of seasonal residents. Because we have so many lakes in our county, we have a lot of people who retire there. So our population doubles in the summer, which causes another extreme shortage of employees. And when we can't house them anywhere, it is a challenge.
Thank you, Ms. Thompson. Representative Nash, any final comments?
Yeah, thank you, Madam Chair. And I think I've actually fished every lake in Hubbard.
Great.
And I remember when the opener, the governor's opener was there, that it was a challenge. But it's a great community, and I know that in spending as much time as I do there, that it is a great community. Some of my fondest childhood memories were from Isla Dreams Resort there in the area, and I know from other things that I've been doing that this workforce housing is a challenge for you. And I hope that our committee can roll up our sleeves and not just solve the ones that we've talked about, but the housing issues in the greater outstate as well, because they're as prescient as ever. Thank you.
Thank you. Final question from Representative Johnson.
Chair Abagie, Ms. Thompson, you said the increase the cost of the project over $700,000 just because of prevailing wage?
Yes.
And what percent of
Representative Johnson.
Chair Abagie, Ms. Thompson, roughly what percentage increase in cost was that?
Ms. Thompson?
You caught me off guard. I would have to get a calculator to see, but if you look at the slide that says project details, what I had done originally is bid the project, having the contractor bid it straight up without considering prevailing wage, and then I went back and had him bid it using the prevailing wage requirements. So these are real numbers that you have in front of you, and you can see the difference. And the one thing about this project is that small communities cannot necessarily attract developers. So this is one that a nonprofit organization is doing, and we are not intending to take a developer fee. And so the savings on this project is significant, just because of the cost structure of a public entity doing it.
Representative Johnson, final question.
Ms. Thompson, I just did the math quickly. It's roughly a 9% increase in cost, and that in these type of projects, that's huge. It's a make or break whether the project will work or not. And this is an issue not just in your area, not in Mayor Fabian's area. This is an issue all over greater Minnesota. Even in my community, just 50 miles north of here, we have a huge issue with workforce housing. We have businesses that have been looking for employers for a decade. They finally find one, but they cannot find a place to stay, a place to live. They want to buy a home, but that takes, it can take many months for the process to, before you close and actually move into a new home. Workforce housing is a major issue all over the greater Minnesota, and it's something, it's just as bad, if not worse, than the issues down here with affordable housing. It's an issue that 10 years ago when I first became a legislator, it was a problem. And we need to roll up our sleeves, get to work, and get things working and get this done. Because this, when the greater Minnesota is thriving, the metro area is just going all out, and it's greater Minnesota that feeds the metro area.
Thank you, Representative Johnson. Thank you so much, Ms. Thompson, for being here and for your presentation. We really appreciate the perspective from greater Minnesota, and we know that we'll all be working hard to make sure that we're providing the correct type of housing and the housing needs across the state. So thank you.
Thank you very much.
With that, members, we will be moving on to the bills in front of us today. The first bill in front of the committee is House File 125 from Representative Hassan. Representative Hassan, would you like to move your bill?
So move, Madam Chair.
Thank you. Representative Hassan moves that her bill, House File 125, be referred to the House Judiciary Finance and Civil Law Committee. Representative Hassan, please present your bill.
Thank you, Madam Chair and members. I think we're all in agreement that we need more housing, and I'm happy about that. Today we have House File 125, which is the right to counsel for public housing tenants in breach of lease cases. As we all know, public housing provides safe rental housing for poor, elderly, and disabled individuals, the most vulnerable members of our society. Public housing was created by federal law and is funded by federal allocations. This bill is a simple bill that provides appointed counsel for public housing tenants in breach of lease cases. Breach of lease cases can involve violations of management rules, claims of minor criminal activity, and disputes between tenants and property managers or other tenants, all which often raise complex questions of law and fact. I want to highlight that the right to counsel would not apply for non-payment of rent. With that, Madam Chair, I have a testifier who would explain more of what this bill does.
Thank you, Representative Hassan. We have on the list Brian Lake. I see he's already at the table. Please introduce yourself for the record and proceed with your testimony.
Thank you, Madam Chair. My name is Brian Lake. I am representing the Minnesota State Bar Association. The MSBA is a voluntary professional association that represents approximately 13,000 attorneys statewide. And what we've structured here with this bill is we've kind of designed it to align with other types of appointed counsel statutes that we have in Minnesota, such as guardianship and civil commitment. And this particular proposal arose out of kind of extensive discussions that we had within the Bar Association about other areas where appointed counsel might be impactful. And this has been a much broader discussion nationwide in the legal community for several years now. We wanted to take a really thoughtful approach and identify the areas of most critical need. And we decided that housing was probably that area, I think for reasons I don't really need to explain to members of this committee. And within housing, drilling down further, we felt that public housing tenants could benefit the most from having appointed counsel because, as Representative Hassan mentioned, they're often elderly, low-income, disabled, perhaps two of those things, perhaps all three of those things. And then we continued drilling down further and decided that breach of lease cases were the most critical need. As Representative Hassan mentioned, this does not apply to non-payment of rent cases. Why? Well, non-payment of rent is relatively simple for a self-represented person to argue in court. They either didn't pay because they didn't pay, or they didn't pay because they had a very good reason not to pay. Breach of lease cases, on the other hand, can get very complicated and involve a mix of federal law, state law, constitutional law, and they can get awfully complex for a self-represented person to identify and understand the relevant issues and then argue them. I mean, I've been an attorney for 15 years, and if I was personally involved in one of these cases, I would want to hire experienced counsel to argue it for me. The good news is our research indicates there's only about 60 of these cases statewide. So what we've presented here is a very narrowly tailored bill that is laser focused on helping the most vulnerable tenants with the most complicated cases. And I want to note that we're not really giving any special advantages here. What we're trying to do is merely level the playing field between the public housing tenants and the public housing authorities who have their own publicly funded attorneys working on these cases. And I want to be clear that we're certainly not saying that public housing authorities are bad people. They're not the villains here. We're just trying to put tenants on equal footing so that they get the due process that I think we all want from the justice system. So if this bill passes, I think what you can expect to see is what we've seen in other jurisdictions that have adopted a right to counsel for tenants. And there have been studies showing that providing a right to counsel for tenants will, rather than having net cost, actually have an economic benefit due to the savings on social safety net services that would otherwise be necessary if there's a sudden disruption in housing. A recent Hennepin County study found that tenants who had an attorney were twice as likely to stay in their homes. They received twice as long to find to move if necessary, and I want to underscore that they were four times less likely to end up in a homeless shelter than unrepresented tenants. In addition, the study found that 78% of represented tenants were able to leave court with a clean eviction record versus only 6% for unrepresented tenants. And these results are consistent with data that's been collected in other jurisdictions that have implemented a right to counsel for tenants. Currently, I believe there are 15 cities and three states as well, and this pending legislation in some other states right now as well, and they could be great for Minnesota to join those states. It would be a really impactful legislation. I just want to thank Representative Hassan for her leadership in carrying this bill, and I'd be happy to take any questions.
Thank you for your testimony, Mr. Lake. Before we move to member questions, I just want to open to see if there's any public testimony from the audience. All right, seeing none, we will move to member questions. I have Representative Petersburg first on my list.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and to the testifier, Mr. Lake. Your report here says that there are approximately 60 breach of lease cases involving public tenants. However, under why this proposal is necessary, you said that they can't come close to meeting the tenant representation needs in the thousands of eviction actions filed every year. That seems to be contradictory, or at least differences. Can you help me understand the differences between those two statements?
So I think you're referring to the statement that legal aid certainly can't keep up with the number of eviction actions that they're asking. So I think the difference, Representative, is we're talking specifically in this bill about only breach of lease cases, only involving public housing tenants. There is, I think, you know, arguably a great need for a much broader right to counsel for a broader range of tenants, and that's what the reference to the thousands of cases. I believe there's something like 16,000 eviction actions just in Hennepin County annually. So that's what the reference is there.
Thank you, Representative Petersburg.
Thank you. I think that probably makes sense to that. The other question is, and thank you, Madam Chair. I've been aware for a long time that public defenders and public defense has been really backlogged in the number of people available. How many hours do you expect one of these cases to be, and will that create an impact onto that legal aid or that public defender caseload?
So public defenders handle criminal matters, and then legal aid handles civil matters. And you are correct that public defenders are incredibly overworked. That's kind of a separate issue. As far as legal aid, and I may have the stat wrong, but it's something like they can only represent they have the resources to represent about a third, or maybe it's 40% of qualified clients that they get. So this particular bill would not be assigning these cases necessarily to legal aid. It would be any type of any attorney who is experienced in handling public housing evictions, or they need to be supervised by an attorney who is. So it would be kind of similar to how we handle civil commitment cases or guardian cases, where a private practice attorney is assigned at typically a much lower rate than they would make in private practice.
Representative Petersburg, any final comments?
Yeah, the question then becomes, and thank you, Madam Chair, if these are being assigned to something, I'm assuming somebody's going to be paying these fees, and I didn't see any kind of fiscal note or a representation on what that cost might be for even if it's 60 cases. Do we have a ballpark figure on what this would cost?
Mr. Lake.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Representative Petersburg. So in talking to attorneys who are experienced in this area, their input is that at the high end, one of these cases would take about 10 hours of attorney time. So in some of the other civil commitment, some of the other right to counsel statutes, the set rate for attorneys is, I think, somewhere between $75 and $125, depending on the type of case. So if this were set at, say, $100, on the high end, it would be about $1,000 a case, so we'd be looking at about $60,000 a year.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you, Representative Petersburg. Representative Nash.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and Representative Petersburg beat me to the punch on the fiscal note. My other question was, can you give me some examples of what a breach of lease might be if it was not non-payment of their rent? I'm just curious as to what that is.
Mr. Lake.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Representative Nash, so anything that would be a violation of the conditions of the lease, like if there was an allegation that there was criminal activity taking place, or perhaps, you know, too many people living in the apartment, things like that that aren't just non-payment of rent, but some other type of violation of the lease.
Representative Nash.
Nothing further.
Representative Johnson.
Chair Abagé, the testifiers. I actually looked at last year's fiscal note. It did not have anything, but it had local expenses. So this bill is going to increase costs to our counties. Mm-hmm. And we got to figure out how we're going to cover that cost because of court time and stuff like that. It's not a lot, but it is a cost to our counties who are struggling right now, and a lot of them are struggling to keep their budgets down because property taxes are getting out of sight. And that's the only thing they have to cover those costs is to raise property taxes. To the testifier, non-payment of rent is a breach, is actually a breach of lease, and it could cause eviction action. I've been looking through the bill, so I think it just needs to be fixed at wherever the next stop is, to put in there something to the effect that it's that it's for something other than non-payment of rent. Because the way it is written now, a non-payment of rent would be covered by this because non-payment is a breach of the lease agreement.
Mr. Lake, any comments to Representative Johnson's comments?
Madam Chair, Representative Johnson, I'm sure Representative Hassan and I would be happy to speak with you about clarifying language in the bill. I believe we're going to judiciary, right?
Yes. Representative Johnson, anything further?
Oh, that's it.
Last person on my list is Representative Myers.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Thank you, Representative Hassan. Mr. Lake, question I had was more in execution on this. So it talks about initial hearing as the opportunity for these individuals to say that they need legal aid. And are most of the eviction proceedings a one hearing? So this would then extend it out to another one? I'm just asking more operationally from it.
Mr. Lake?
I don't handle these cases, so I don't know the answer to that question, but I can get you that information. My understanding is be more than one hearing.
Okay.
Representative Myers?
Appreciate it. Thank you.
Thank you. Representative Hassan, or any other further member comments, questions? Not seeing anything. Representative Hassan, to your bill, any closing comments?
Thank you, Madam Chair. And I just want to say that this bill passed this committee last time 13-0. Everyone supported, and it's a simple bill to fix something that we need to fix. And I am more than happy to talk to anyone who has either concern or a question or needs some clarification. This bill addresses the most vulnerable in our community, our elders, disabled, and people who live in low-income housing who are mostly low-income families. With that, I hope everyone can support. Thank you.
Thank you. Representative Hassan renews her motion to House File 315 be re-referred to the House Judiciary Finance and Civil Law Committee. All those in favor say aye.
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 All those opposed? The bill passes. And I will now hand over the gavel back to Chair Howard.
Thank you, members. The joy of presenting a bill at the same time your committee's in order, but glad to see you're making good work, and I'll catch up on the presentation I missed earlier. And Representative Hassan, you're up again with House File 319. Would you like to move your bill?
So moved, Mr. Chair.
Representative Hassan moves that House File 319 be re-referred to the House Judiciary Finance and Civil Law Committee. Representative Hassan, to your bill.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. Thank you for the opportunity to present House File 319, which is the 14-day notice prior to filing an eviction. For someone who represents a district that has a large population of renters, I'm sure you can understand why affordable and stable housing is important to me, or why I want to update our eviction laws. Research indicates that stable housing supports better educational outcomes and improved life chances for young people. Folks who have stabilized housing are the ones that result in healthier, happier, and safer lives. Stable housing promotes labor mobility and growth and productivity for our state's economy. It provides the circumstances to build savings and financial resilience to meet one's life. The last few years, we have had a lot of uncertainties thrown at us due to a pandemic that challenged our way of life. We also had thousands of Minnesotans who lost a loved one, some who lost their jobs and were unable to pay rent, mortgage, buy food, or continue to provide for their families. If we, as elected leaders, did not act fast enough and put an eviction moratorium in place, we would have had thousands of Minnesotans out in the cold. Minnesota is only one of four states nationwide that doesn't have a prior notice of eviction in the books. And as you have heard, our tenant laws have not been updated in the last two decades. In this bill, we're requiring landlords to give tenants 14-day notice prior to filing an eviction. This is a crucial step to keep people housed. Did you know that it takes 21 days for Hennepin County Emergency Assistance to be processed and 14 days for Ramsey County, and that's, mind you, that's prior to COVID. If someone suddenly loses their job and must seek an assistance from the county, it takes at least two or more weeks to get approved for assistance. This legislation gives folks more time to find appropriate assistance needed for before an eviction is filed. It's a fact that eviction is costly and impacts families and individuals negatively for many years to come. So it's my understanding we're leveling the playing field and avoiding the filing of an eviction in the first place. And this, in my opinion, is common ground for both landlords and tenants. With that, Mr. Chair, I have a testifier to help us explain this bill more, and we'll stand for questions.
Thank you, Ms. Sterling. Welcome back.
Hello again. I am Rachel Sterling. I am a housing attorney with Homeline, a statewide nonprofit that assists tenants with legal advice and questions. I'm here today, Chair Howard and representatives, to urge you to support House File 319, which addresses needed eviction reform of a pre-eviction notice. So historically, around 90%, and as I said last week, over 87% just this last year of all evictions in Minnesota are for non-payment of rent. Once an eviction is filed, it immediately goes in a tenant's record unless it's expunged. However, Minnesota law creates no obligation for landlords to warn a tenant prior to filing that eviction in court and creating that public record. So it's important to note that the majority of states already require some form of pre-eviction filing notice, as Representative Hassan has said. So the majority of the country now, and even some Minnesota cities now, have recognized that such notices are good practice. Minnesota's eviction process was actually designed over 100 years ago, and basically today it is being used as a form of rent collection. So giving tenants a pre-eviction notice prior to filing an eviction for non-payment gives them clarity regarding exactly what their landlord is saying that they owe and allows them time to correct any mistakes in payments, to pay any money owed, seek emergency financial aid, or simply to decide to move rather than face an eviction on their record. It also gives landlords and tenants time to discuss any disputed amounts or come to an agreement about a payment plan without having to deal with the court, meaning landlords can avoid the costs of an eviction. Some Minnesota landlords have already adopted the practice of giving their tenants a pre-eviction notice, recognizing it as a good business practice. And so for these landlords, the law would have very little effect. But based on the massive volume of clients Homeline advises on this issue, I can state that this is not a consistent approach for all landlords. So the reality is that pre-eviction notices aren't required, so many landlords just choose not to do it. I've personally spoken with many tenants whose first notice that they get that their landlord has actually filed an eviction is the court summons, which by current law only needs to be served to the tenant 7 days prior to their hearing date. So this can leave tenants scrambling to figure out what resources are available to them to help address these issues. So this proposal legitimizes the sound business practices that many landlords already do, while also giving tenants protections from landlords who have not adopted these best business practices. Finally, a 14-day pre-eviction notice mirrors the required procedure already in place for when a landlord is in breach of a lease. So if a tenant has a problem with repairs or substandard living conditions in their home, they are required to provide their landlord with a 14-day written notice before they can file a rent escrow court case against their landlord. In the current system, the landlord has no obligation to warn the tenant that they will file a court case despite the stakes being significantly higher than a rent escrow action. An eviction has a real chance of making a renting family homeless and housing insecure for years. This 14-day pre-eviction notice makes this required communication reciprocal in order to help keep resolvable issues out of the court system. For all of the aforementioned reasons, we hope that you will support House File 319. Thank you, Chair Howard and Representatives.
Thank you. Next, we have Maria Kruger. Welcome to the committee.
Thank you. Chair Howard, members of the committee, for the past 5 years, I have been the housing program manager and a resource attorney at Volunteer Lawyers Network. I'm responsible for the training and supervision of volunteer lawyers providing legal services to low-income Minnesotans going through eviction actions in Anoka, Hennepin, and Ramsey County. At our housing court clinics, we advise both low-income landlords and tenants on almost a daily basis. Based upon my experience, I am here speaking in favor of House File 319,
for four specific reasons, and many of the reasons have already been stated, so I'll be quick. First, the proposed changes to the statute are fair, common sense, and create good business practices. What the bill is essentially doing is mandating good and clear communication between landlords and tenants. The bill clearly states what information a landlord must include in a 14-day notice for non-payment of rent eviction, and it further includes important details to facilitate access to financial assistance. Many landlords are already doing something very similar to this. My second reason is what's already been stated. Minnesota's law is dreadfully behind the times here. We know that Minnesota has one of the fastest eviction processes. We know that we're one of only four states that don't have a notice provision. The reasons to pass House File 319 continue to pile up when we realize that, once again, over 90% of evictions are for non-payment of rent. Evictions disproportionately affect people of color, and that an eviction is the start of a spiral into poverty and homelessness for many families. In my mind, the statutory change is low-hanging fruit that should have been adopted a long time ago. Third, the additional time in non-payment of rent eviction really matters. There are a good number of reasons why people are unaware that they're about to be evicted for non-payment of rent. And even if they're not surprised, accessing rental assistance takes time, as we've heard already. And while that amount of time will vary from county to county, the current amount of time between evictions being filed and the tenant being evicted is just not enough time for tenants to adequately access financial assistance. Fourth and finally, if a landlord needs to evict a tenant quickly, there is an expedited eviction process and eviction for breach of lease, neither of which would have a notice requirement underneath this statute. Neither tenants nor landlords want to go to court over non-payment event of evictions. And for tenants, it's particularly long-lasting repercussion because that eviction follows tenants for a long time. What both parties want to have happen is that the tenant pays the rent. I'd like to close with one final thought. People generally fall behind on rent because of circumstances behind their control. Broken down cars, lost jobs, illnesses, or deaths in the family. There should not be a rushing to court here. What we want to do with our eviction for non-payment of rent law is ensure that court is used as a last resort. We want the parties to have access to and the resources necessary to restabilize themselves as quickly as possible and avoid that downward spiral that evictions send people into. I believe the changes proposed in House File 319 are a step in that direction. Thank you.
Thank you. Next, we have Bernadette Hornig with Hornig Companies. Ms. Hornig, welcome to the committee.
Thanks. Good afternoon. My name is Bernadette Hornig. I work for Hornig Companies. We're a third-generation family business that owns and manages about 5,000 apartments across the state of Minnesota. I agree with many of Representative Hassan's comments and the previous testifiers, but I do have a couple of concerns. I understand the need for notice, and I know that at a face value, if you're not operating in this environment every day, it seems totally reasonable to offer a 14-day notice. I just want to point out a couple things. When a tenant or a resident and a property owner signs a document, they have a lease. The lease states the rent is due on the first every month. So it shouldn't be a surprise to most renters that the rent is due on the first. I also totally understand that people have life circumstances that prevent them often or from time to time from making those payments on the first. And it is best practice that people have a grace period of 3 to 5 days before assessing a late fee or taking people to court. I also understand that's not mandated by law. But I do believe that offering, if you start at the first, there's a grace period, you tack on 14 days, you're now 2 to 3 weeks late at this point. That assumes that you would immediately go to court after the 14th day. It could be the weekend. Anyway, you're basically getting into month two now. So that, you know, that's a long time, and the people will be functionally 2 months behind. If they couldn't pay 1 month, now they can't pay the second month likely. And now I know there's a lot of discussion about how quick the Minnesota eviction process is. Currently, that's not the case. We're seeing when we file an eviction, in Hennepin County, it's taking 90 days for us to get any sort of court action. So at this point, if, assuming that the person isn't paying their rent this whole time and you haven't settled it, you're now looking at someone who's 6 months behind on rent, which is a big hole to climb out of. And it's not, you're setting, not setting people up for success, and you're not setting people up for financial stability. I think that there are alternatives, like speeding up the emergency assistance process. I think it's ridiculous to make people wait 2 to 3 weeks for them to process the paperwork. And we're giving, I feel like a proposal like this is giving the government plenty of time to take time to process and work through a bureaucratic paper pushing sort of situation, while small businesses like us are forced to bear the brunt of not having that collected rent, which we then in turn use to pay property taxes, insurance, our employees, maintain our buildings. So if we have people that aren't paying for 2 to 6 months, that puts a financial burden on these properties, and doesn't allow us to provide the level of service that we would expect to apply to our properties. So we want to help residents access funds, stay housed, but we just, I believe this is just too long to wait given the current circumstances.
Thank you. Is there any other members of the public who'd like to testify? I see somebody. Thank you for joining us. Please state your name for the record.
Hello, Chair Michael Howard, members of the committee. I'm Stephanie Saji. I'm a mother, a survivor, a duplex owner, and I'm providing housing through the Stable Home, Stable Schools program in Minneapolis. And I'm also the Housing and Economic Justice Program Policy Manager at Violence Free Minnesota, the Coalition to End Relationship Abuse. In solidarity with MnCASA, the Minnesota Coalition to End Sexual Assault, I'm here today testifying in support of House File 319 on behalf of both coalitions. VFMN and MnCASA are statewide coalitions with over 80 member programs. Our programs provide advocacy and services to domestic violence and sexual violence victims and survivors throughout all of Minnesota's 87 counties. Domestic violence has been identified as one of the top 5 reasons people experience homelessness in Minnesota. Evictions are one of the reasons a survivor and their children become homeless. Eviction records, even when they are dismissed, unfounded, caused by an abusive partner, or remedied, are one of the reasons survivors and their children continue to experience homelessness, housing instability, and further compromise within the system for years. Becoming homeless initiates a domino effect that is the catalyst to further destabilization and dependence through loss of job, health, mental well-being, and more. Non-payment of rent can be a symptom of financial abuse. Studies have found that approximately 99% of survivors experience financial abuse in their relationships, which compromises victim-survivors' access and control over finances. In the case that a survivor is unaware of the lack of rent payment, a formal 14-day notice, as provided in HF-319, creates an intervention of action opportunity for survivors to engage a domestic violence advocate and seek services and support, which can remedy more than just the outstanding rent. Destabilization of housing by harm doers can be a form of abuse. The initial and immediate public eviction record results in a similar disbarment to societal access that a criminal record has, and starts a subsequent path into devastating stigmatization, resulting in a lack of access for a survivor to meet their basic needs due to having a record that may not accurately reflect the type of tenant that the survivor is. Even after a survivor fortifies their life to meet all the on-paper requirements to access independent housing, the residual stigma of an eviction creates barriers to housing access that continues to oppress. An eviction record can single-handedly prevent a survivor from obtaining safe housing. In a recent study or survey that Violence Free conducted with survivors, nearly 50% of respondents listed past evictions as being one of the most challenging parts of a tenant screening process. Evictions add to the often insurmountable hurdles that survivors face in finding safe housing, which is the foundation to healing and stabilizing their life and the lives of their children. This testimony space does not afford the time to further elaborate on the intersectionality of hundreds of years of racial inequity enacted through systems to oppress and silence Black, Indigenous, and BIPOC relatives that has a direct impact on our current state of domestic violence and our housing crisis, which includes 55,000 rent-burdened Minnesotans, one crisis away from an eviction notice. 14 days to rectify before an eviction action, in lieu of an immediate record that indefinitely affects future choices and accessibility for survivors and their children, is a small concession for landlords to make. when the price that tenants pay is so high and longstanding. We urge you to pass House File HF-319 and with it, create an opportunity for increased safety and long-term stability for survivors and their family so that the policies in place are no longer contributing to the harm. Thank you for your time.
Thank you, Ms. Haji. With that, we'll go to member questions. Representative Myers.
Thank you, Chair. Representative Hassan, question I had looking at the bill, the very first part talks about terminating tenancy at will, and it strikes out Section B there. And so is the intent now, I mean, with A, is that how I read it, the minimum time amount is 30 days? Because I read it as time, interval between time rent is due.
Representative Hassan or Ms. Sterling.
Board testifier.
I'd be happy to tell Chair Howard. Representative, so a tenancy at will is a very specific defined legal tenancy. So a term tenancy is one that has a lease that has a specific lease term. After that term ends, if the lease or if the lease just doesn't have a specific date time, that's a tenancy at will. And so it just has different standard under the current statutes of what the notice requirement is at a minimum. So that's what Part A is talking about. And then the Part B, it just, instead of having a call out, just carve out just for tenancy at wills, it's moving it to all of the tenancies.
Representative Myers.
Thank you. So, I mean, I read that a little bit more conflicting. I mean, that strikeout to me means a tenancy at will, which again is a handshake deal, or if you did have a contract afterwards and then you rent it after that period. I just want to make sure that, and maybe judiciary can look at this a little bit, that it is going to then be covered under that subsection 3 that talks about the 14-day requirement. So I read it a little bit different. I just want to make sure that it's clearly spelled out. Unless the intention was for a tenancy at will to have 30 days.
Ms. Sterling.
I'm sorry, you said section 3?
Yeah, second page, number 2.27. Oh. That talks about your 14-day notice requirement.
C3, gotcha.
Sorry.
Ms. Sterling.
Thank you.
I just looked at that. Oh, go ahead.
Oh, okay. I think.
Ms. Sterling.
Thank you, Representative. Chair Howard, Representative. So that I think that we may have to talk about that language specifically, because how I read line 2.27 is that so the landlord is allowed to bring the eviction action following the expiration of the 14-day notice period. So if the notice period is what you're specifically speaking of, the notice period that's talked about on section or 1.8, starting on that line, that's the notice of ending the tenancy at will, notice to vacate, essentially. So not the notice of non-payment pre-eviction notice. It's a different notice.
Okay, thank you. That clarifies it. Thank you.
Representative Dotseff.
Thank you, Chair Howard. Representative, it's more of a comment or maybe a food for thought. It really appears that we create more division between property owners as well as tenants. I think maybe we should be focusing more on maybe shoring up some of these different programs that are already in existence right now and try to figure out where we can have one point of direction to direct people to. I'm not the smartest guy in the block, but just looking at this from 1,000 feet up, I think maybe there's some better solutions that we can look at instead of creating more divisions between property owners and tenants, and just bringing those programs into place a little bit more and helping assist with those assistance programs. Just a thought. Thank you.
Thanks, Mr. Dotseff. I'm going to go to Representative Cha.
Yes, thank you, Chair Howard. This is to the testifier, Stephanie Saji. I hope I said your last name correctly. I just want to thank you for your courage to be here today and for your testimony and your story. It's very touching, and I want to let you know that as a member here, I will be supporting this bill 319. Thank you.
Representative Petersburg.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. You know, I think we heard from the last testifier a term that I don't think I've heard here before, and that is wrongdoers, or harmdoers, excuse me, harmdoers. And I, just for clarifying, I want to make sure that we understand that there are harmdoers on both sides of the equation. Both tenants and landlords can abuse the system based upon the programs that are there. And I think everybody around this table does not want that abuse to happen. And so we certainly want to do things that are there. My concern is with the language here, mm-hmm. and whether or not Representative Hassan, as author of this bill, do you have any concerns that this type of language, in which it makes it so formal a presentation, is actually going to limit and actually restrict those that want to do right with their tenants, landlords, et cetera, and actually create a more formal position in which as soon as it becomes the 5 days or 3 days, whatever is there, you automatically file the 14-day notice rather than working with the client. Do you feel that there may be situations in which this will actually restrict the willingness to work with tenants to actually work this through? Because once you go into this formal process, there's going to be kind of an automatic pilot in which things happen, in which the eviction notice and so forth starts out. I'm just wondering if you have any thoughts about that.
Representative Hassan.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And Representative Petersburg, there are good landlords and there are good tenants. Sure. This isn't a, you know, one size fits all, and we're not all painting in one brush and saying that all landlords are terrible and all tenants are great. People are going to run into bad tenants, and they're going to run into bad landlords. And this is just to protect, because 90% of evictions are lack of payment. That's not me saying, that's what research says, 90%. So if there is a way to give people a leg up, considering the fact that our counties cannot process, emergency, assistance payment fast enough, considering the fact that we just, experienced COVID-19, a pandemic that we had no clue what to do with. So life circumstances come up, and there's no, we're not saying that landlords and tenants cannot talk to each other, cannot figure this out outside of all of this. But what we're saying is that if it comes down to protecting tenants, then there are laws that protect tenants. Minnesota is considered a landlord-friendly state. That means this state has not changed or ratified their tenant laws in the last two decades. So we're just catching up with the rest of the country. That's what we're doing.
And we do have three members on the list, and then another bill to get to, but quick follow-up, Representative Petersburg.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm just saying is that landlords who want to work with them, putting this kind of language kind of puts them on notice that they better get this 14-day notice in place immediately just because. And so it really is, to me, a concern that we are putting that kind of formality into the system. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Representative Nash.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. If the testifier that was the family-owned apartment could come down. And Representative Hassan, you almost got me. I'm just trying to figure out how do we protect the business owners who, if you're a small operator, cash flow is everything. I've told you I'm a recovering business owner. When we were first getting our business off the ground, there were times that we considered mortgaging the dog just to make sure that cash flow was going to be something that we had. And I'm just wondering from the testifier's perspective, 14 days, I don't know the percentage of evictions that would, or proceedings that this would go through, but from a cash flow perspective, what does this tie up? Because you mentioned that, and I'm just trying to process that through my head because I want to make sure that you're not jammed up. Because you, as you said, have to make property tax payments and you have employees and you have all these things. And I'm just trying to figure out what does this do to, for lack of a better term, the supply chain of cash for your business.
Ms. Horning.
Thank you, Chair and Representative Nash. I would say, you know, obviously it varies person to person, situation to situation, so it's hard to speak on a universal truth. I think my concern, again, with the 14 days is that it kicks off a chain of events, and if in the data that was cited as far as processing emergency assistance applications, it sounds like 14 days isn't even enough time for someone to get the emergency assistance. So you're talking about tying, if the rent is due on the 1st, there's a grace period, then you give the notice, then you wait the 14 days, then you file, then you're basically, you have to, the way that the system is set up, I understand the need and the desire to make our eviction process more equitable and more compassionate, but this is not going to do that, because what ends up happening is people are going to file on that 15th day because the courts are so backed up that you basically have to file, because if you're going to be doing these negotiations and doing those things, it's like you have to hedge your bet with the court action in the back, because if it doesn't happen, then you're out 3, 6, whatever months of rent. And I appreciate all of the statistics about stability of home, inequities in housing, all of those things. And I think we need to look at real solutions. To me, the solution is increasing the speed of decision-making on emergency assistance applications. And I understand, I mean, it's been a long time since I was in civics, but I understand we're at the state, and that's a county matter, and I get all that. You guys can't really do anything about that. But I think the real issue here is people need money. 90% of the evictions are for non-payment. How do we get the money into the hands of the people that need it faster? Because those are the people that are stressed out and struggling. And then if you let these situations hang out for a long period of time, you're then creating stress for the small business owner and individuals, because then they're struggling to make their bills, right? So it's like I know it feels good, and it seems like it's a great idea. I don't think it's actually going to do anything to fix the problem. That's the issue, and it's going to create more problems for locally, like for any operator to operate rental property in Minnesota. And it's an outlier. I mean, if you look at the other states around us, it's like 3 to 5 days if you require. I'm all for notices. I mean, giving people information about where to access. I think that's great, you know, unifying so people understand. That part's fine. It's the timeline and understanding where the timeline fits in.
Representative Nash, quick follow-up.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chair. So let's say your particular business were to have 6 or 7 of these, and that's an aberration, I'm sure, but if that were the case, and they were to go to a 2-month or a 3-month place, now you're out a significant sum of money that you've got to either dip into reserves.
Yeah, that's what the eviction moratorium did for us. Like, I mean, we were still recovering from that because we had that going on for a year where people could just hang out and not pay their rent and there was nothing we could do about it. Like, I mean, 6 or 7, let's talk about like 50. I mean, we have a big portfolio, right? Let's talk about 50 or 100 people doing that. We just don't want to perpetuate that status of people hanging out in the middle without a clear decision, right? Like, that's what we don't want. We want there to be resolution so it takes the stress off the renter and it takes the stress off the property owner or manager.
And Mr. Chair, that's where I was going to talk about the eviction moratorium and that effect. But Representative Hassan, could we maybe look at a shorter notification period? Is there a compromise that we have here trying to be amicable? I don't know, but I think and what we're hearing is that this could have a hugely deleterious effect on the housing providers and their ability to continue to deliver services. I'm just asking if there's some kind of compromise out there.
Representative Hassan.
Mr. Chair and Rep. Nash, we are only 4 states that don't have an prior notice before filing an eviction. I am more than happy to talk offline, but I don't think that the rest 46 states are falling apart and you know, people, landlords are like running away from those states and coming to Minnesota because we don't have an eviction. I think this is something that's doable. It protects people. And I think it puts a playing field for the landlord and the tenant to work together and say that, what can we do together? It doesn't still take away the you know, the chance for people to talk and have conversation and say that, hey, I will pay you at this time, or I'm working on this or that. We're not taking that right away. We're just saying that, is there a way to protect people from being evicted? Eviction hurts families. It impacts people's lives forever, and that's what we're trying to do here.
Representative Baje.
Thank you, Chair Howard, and thank you, Representative Hassan, for bringing this bill. I will just quickly state that, you know, what we're trying to do here is really just bring in conformity across the state, because we do already have jurisdictions that are already doing pre-eviction notice, and it's ranging now. So we've got places like Minneapolis and St. Louis Park that are doing 14 days. We also have Brooklyn Center, Brooklyn Park that's doing 30 days. So if a landlord wants to operate in Minnesota, now they've got a patchwork of which city are they operating in, what notice do they have to pay attention to, and if we want to make this fair for everyone, I think having a statewide 14-day notice, which is actually a nationwide standard that allows people the opportunity to engage with legal help if they need it, emergency rental assistance. We do all know that, yes, there's still more that needs to be done to make sure that emergency rental assistance is getting out on time, and we are willing to work on that. But this is the type of standard that we need to ensure that people have the stability in their homes, because, yes, 4, 5, 6, 50 people being out for a landlord, that hurts a landlord's business. But what about those 50 families? Where are they supposed to go? So I think when we have something in place like this, we can start to kind of stabilize the process, make sure that there's time in the space, and that landlords can get paid and tenants can keep their homes, and that we, and we're still keeping opportunities for people to talk to each other. But this is just when the lease breaks down, when the contract breaks down, worst case scenario, that is what legislation does. That is what statutes do. And that's, I just want to ground us in that when we're having these conversations. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you. Representative Johnson.
Chair Howard, Representative Hassan. I understand the what you're trying to do on this bill. And it's people in your community that are having the problem. Am I correct?
Could you rephrase the question, Representative?
It's the Representative Howard, Representative Hassan. It's the people in your community that are having the problem with this eviction issue. Is that correct?
Representative Hassan.
Mr. Chair and Rep. Johnson, define your community. What's my community?
Representative Johnson.
The district you live in, because you represented the people in your district.
Well, Mr. Chair and Rep. Johnson, the eviction numbers that we have seen are throughout the state of Minnesota. It's not my district alone.
Representative Johnson.
Chair Howard, Representative Hassan. I was just looking at the numbers from Hennepin County. They are high. In fact, but if you do the average after COVID, they're below average, going back to when we had the eviction moratorium started. The total numbers compared to the average is below that. So we're actually doing better. Currently, there are only five states in the United States that require a 14-day. Massachusetts, Maine, Rhode Island, Tennessee, and Vermont. And all of them have a higher eviction rate than the state of Minnesota. In fact, Minnesota is one of the five lowest states for evictions. I'm concerned that as the housing provider that is up here testifying says, that they might go out of business if they have too many evictions. They don't want to evict people. They want their cash flow. They need their cash flow in order to provide the housing for the other tenants in the building. So we got to make sure that we have the proper balance. Granted, we haven't done much with our tenant and eviction laws in 20 years. Guess what? It's working. Minnesota has one of the lowest eviction rate in the country. Don't fix it if it's not broke. Hennepin County does have the 14-day. Hennepin County, it takes almost 30 days for them to do their paperwork for people asking assistance. The last few years, we've had other issues with the city of Minneapolis, Hennepin County, doing things. We don't have that problem elsewhere in the state. Here we are again trying to fix an issue, a statewide, where it's, the issue is limited. You even said that 90% of housing providers do the right thing. And this is punishing the 90% because of 10%. You don't throw the whole bushel out because of one bad apple. I think we need to really look at what's going on here, take a bigger look, dive into what's the problem. Is the problem the tenant's not notifying the housing provider that there's some issues so they can help them? It's communications on both sides, and issues like stuff like this could actually decrease communication between the tenants and the housing providers. Most housing providers do not want to do the eviction process because it's expensive. It can take a long time, and once that starts from the first month of non-payment, the second month they're not paying, the third month they're not paying. And somebody who's actually done the entire eviction process from the beginning to the final stage where the officer has to come in and physically remove somebody, that can take up to 12 months. It's not a quick process. And that's 12 months of non-payment of the rent to the housing provider, who now has to make up the difference by charging the other tenants more or not providing services that they want to provide the other tenants. Instead of something like this, maybe we should look at things to help communicate better. And with that, I will let us move on because we have other bills to go.
And I'll go to Representative Fasson for a quick comment, but I just myself wanted to mention that we heard a presentation earlier that we had 22,000 evictions in Minnesota last year. There was just an article in the Star Tribune of the huge burden on families that have been evicted with huge spiking numbers. So we do have a huge problem here in Minnesota. And we've spent a lot of time talking about the concept of 14 days, that time period, and I just want to ground us in another length of time, 7 years. 7 years is how long somebody who faces eviction is going to have that on their record. And to create a 14-day notice, to create that kind of communication, to create that kind of win-win where someone's able to avoid eviction and a landlord's able to get paid seems eminently reasonable, especially given that 46, 47 other states have a something like this in place. So I thank you for bringing the bill. I'll allow you to make a quick closing comment, and then I know we have another bill.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I want to thank everyone for this wonderful conversation. I just want to make sure that put this on the record. This is not a Minneapolis problem. This is not a Hennepin County problem. If you come to my district, I will show each and every one of you someone who is homeless that is in my district who came from your district, because there are no services in most districts. So this is not, if you think this is a Minneapolis problem, I want you to think again. This is a statewide issue, and we're facing with a problem that we have no solutions for. So please come to the table and have more conversations. I'll leave you with this story. I have a friend who came from Norway who was visiting here. Of course, Norway House is in my district. We went to Norway House, and after that, he wanted to see what my district looks like, and we saw the encampment in my district. He was heartbroken, and it was shocking for him to see that there are human beings living outside, because where he came from in Norway, everyone has the right to housing. So the greatest country in the world, where people think that United States is this wonderful, amazing country, people are sleeping outside. I want to leave that with you. Please support this bill. Thank you.
Representative Hasson renews her motion that House File 319 be re-referred to the House Judiciary Finance and Civil Law Committee. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye. Opposed say nay.
No.
Motion carries. Up next, we have House File 602. Representative Perez Vega.
Thank you.
Representative Perez Vega, welcome to the committee. Well, you're here on the committee. Welcome to present your bill.
Thank you, Chairman Howard and members of the committee. I am here to present House File 602. Good afternoon. Once again, Chairman and members of the committee, today I present to you House File 602, a bill for an act relating to housing, prohibiting an eviction for non-payment of rent when an application for rental assistance for the tenant is pending. In January 2022, nearly 8,000 Minnesotans went a night unsheltered. At this rate, we are becoming not only the land of over 10,000 lakes, but becoming the land of over 10,000 homeless, not just in the Twin Cities and the metro area, but in greater Minnesota as well. A 2018 study by the National Law Center of Homelessness and Poverty found that evictions, whether through formal court proceedings or other methods of involuntary displacement from housing, are a direct cause of homelessness either immediately or after social safety networks are exhausted. The study references multiple surveys in various states that found that evictions have a significant impact on the likelihood of homelessness. Eight other states are providing some form of statewide eviction protections: Indiana, Massachusetts, Michigan, Nevada, New Jersey, New Mexico, New York, and Washington. By enacting reasonable eviction protections, ensuring those who may qualify for aid and have pending applications are not evicted, we can stave off unnecessary crisis of homelessness and work to restore livability for families rather than further stressing a broken shelter system. This is a straightforward bill. Goals of this bill are to balance housing stability and prevent evictions, providing rent payments to landlords for financially struggling tenants. There are a variety of state and local rental assistance programs and sometimes federal money, as we saw during the pandemic. I want to give a personal story right now in which I faced as a new mother in the middle of a government world global shutdown due to the pandemic. I had no work. All of my contracts were canceled, as is the father of my daughter. We had not experienced any issues with paying rent as renters before, but we're in an emergency situation. We filed. We had a landlord who understood. Pending was for a while. Our world was adjusting, and it still is in the aftermath of that. I was lucky to receive that from our county, in which we were able to move forward and are back into a stable condition following a very rough 2 years. This bill, HF 602, gives eligible renters an opportunity to apply for programs for which they are eligible and gives landlords the opportunity to receive the rent payments they are due while keeping families in their homes. Renters who are financially fragile should not be punished for being poor or just needing a little extra time for help. This bill gives renters the chance to get help with rent and avoid homelessness and future housing insecurity. During the pandemic and eviction moratorium, millions of dollars were provided to renters and landlords under a similar bill. This year, we're seeking a large infusion of funds for state rental assistance. Acknowledge that during the moratorium, there was frustration amongst landlords and tenants about the time it took to obtain a decision on the application and to get the rent payments to those landlords. It is true that rental assistance applications are not processed as quickly as we'd like, and payments to landlords are delayed longer than we'd like. I'm committed to working with the state and the county programs and with landlord and tenant advocates to ensure a smoother system and that the money gets out the door in a more timelier manner. I'm sure that we can fix this issue because I'm a survivor of these issues, and I'm also grateful for the work that this state has done, but we need to do more. And there's folks that aren't as lucky as I am to be here. I ask for the members of the committee to support HF 602. Gracias.
Thank you, Representative. Our first testifier is Mary Kajorik, Managing Attorney with Legal Aid. Ms. Kajorik.
Sir Howard, members. My name is Mary Kachorik. I'm a managing attorney at Mid-Minnesota Legal Aid. Legal Aid is part of a statewide coalition of nonprofit law firms that provide assistance to low-income renters in all 87 counties. This bill is a win-win-win. It's a win for renters because they get a fair shake in their eviction case. It's a win for the government, who has the opportunity and the time to process applications for help to get money that needs to go out into the community, into the community. And it's a win for landlords, because landlords have a better shot at getting paid at the end of the day and getting that rent money that's owed to them when a tenant falls behind. As we've heard earlier today, the vast majority of evictions in Minnesota are for non-payment of rent. And the law right now says that a court can give a tenant up to 7 days to pay everything that they owe to the landlord. Legal Aid unfortunately sees landlords who routinely refuse to negotiate with their tenants beyond that 7-day window. And that 7-day window is discretionary. The court doesn't even have to grant that. So as we've heard, this doesn't match up with how long it takes for the county to process an emergency assistance application. And more often than not, folks are getting evicted because there just isn't enough time for the county to get their application processed. So folks are getting displaced and put out of their homes and put out just because the county couldn't get their application through fast enough. There are so many good landlords who already work with their tenants to create payment plans to give the county that time that they need. And that's because it makes sense to do that. It is good for a tenant to stay in their home, obviously, but it's also good for the landlord. They don't have to turn over the property. They don't have to find a new tenant. And they get paid at the end of the day. This bill just takes that common sense approach and applies it across the board to everybody. Thank you for the opportunity to testify. I'm happy to answer questions.
Next, we have Bernadette Hornig. Welcome back.
Hi, good afternoon. I'm back. I agree with the spirit of this bill. I think this is a good idea to allow people time to seek rental assistance funds when they're available. My only concern is that, as was mentioned by the author and by the previous testifier, is that it's hard to control how long it takes these applications to be processed. And without any time period for what pending means, it can drag on. And we have had situations where it's dragged on for 6 to 12 months where people have been kicked in and out of the application review process. That's not fair to the renter. That's not fair to the property owner. And again, I feel like without any sort of timeline or accountability on the government agencies that are reviewing these applications, that you're putting an undue stress on everybody involved. And I guess my frustration is I see this as the government putting on more rules without holding itself accountable. So if you're going to do something like this, there needs to be a timeline, a reasonable timeline, for these applications to be processed so people can get a decision and move on with their lives and receive the funds they're entitled to receive. And so that's my concern. But otherwise, I think it's a great idea.
Thank you. And we have a little bit of time left. And I've a little housekeeping. The motion here on this bill is to be laid over for possible inclusion. And I know that there is an amendment, the A1. Lee Johnson, did you want to offer the A1?
Chair Howard, I would like to offer the A1. I'll explain it if you would like.
Please do, Representative Johnson.
The A1 amendment is an attempt to put some timelines on the process. When we had the pandemic relief for the housing providers, we missed the mark on that. We didn't have any timelines, didn't have any requirements on both parts. What this amendment does, it requires the, one thing that happened, tenants would start the application and sometimes would never complete them. But so it was always pending and pending and pending. Housing providers were never paid. Nothing could be done because the way the bill was written, it was pending. So what this does is requires that the tenant cooperate and provide everything they need in a timely manner and also within 10 days of a disposition, notify the housing provider of what the situation is, and it goes from there. And it's a way to start some communication. I would hope that if the tenant was going to be in trouble, they'd start this process before the rent was due, so they can actually get things done right away, so it alleviates some tension between the tenant and the housing provider. I do hope that you'll take it as a friendly amendment.
Representative Perez Vega.
Friendly. Hi, Chairman.
You know, if I get an oral amendment in regards to adding three words.
So you're proposing an oral amendment, Representative Perez Vega?
Yeah, if I can get, you know, friendly.
What are you proposing?
I'm proposing that we add three words, that it shouldn't just fall on the responsibility of the tenant. It should fall with the communication between the tenant and the landlord. So I would add the three words of "and the landlord must cooperate with the agency or organization providing the assistance and complete any requests on a pending application in a timely manner."
It is a couple words. I want to go to the author of the amendment, Representative Johnson.
I'm just wondering, does the property owner even involved in the application?
I will say I know for most rental assistance applications they are, at least I'm aware, but I could go quickly to maybe Ms. Kajorek.
Thank you, Chair Howard. Representative, yes, the landlords are involved. They need to provide a W-9. They need to provide a lease, a ledger that includes the current month. A lot of times what the tenant has is an older ledger that doesn't include the most recent month. And landlords do need to participate in the process. This language does make sense from like a common sense workability approach. Thank you.
Representative Johnson, you okay with that?
I am fine with that.
Staff, could you read that back for us so we make sure we know what we're doing correctly, Ms. Davis?
Yeah. Chair and members, the oral amendment to the H0602A1 amendment is on page 1, line 2, after the word tenant, insert, and the landlord.
So I will move for a vote for that amendment to the amendment. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed. The amendment to the amendment is adopted. Now we are on the A1 as amended. And I will say I'm supportive of this amendment in the spirit of it. I think it is aimed at improving that sort of communication piece. And so unless there's other discussion, I'll call for a vote on the amended A1. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed. The amendment is adopted. To the bill as amended, are there questions? Representative Nash?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Just very quickly, and Representative Perez Vega, on lines 2.17 through 2.21, you say if there is one application, what happens if that application is denied? Can the person then file another one and then put it into forestallment again? I don't know if that's your intent, and I hope it's not, because it seems to me that if you're not going to get the help and they've denied it for some whatever reason, that it could put the housing provider in a long series of not getting paid based on perhaps the person who's seeking assistance having that denied for some reason. You see where I'm headed with that?
Representative Perez Vega.
Thank you, Chairman. Yeah, I have to look into more as far as seeing where you're getting into it, because first and foremost, the pending is because a lot of, and I can speak on behalf of that, is you're waiting. You're waiting to see if you got accepted. And you're applying not maybe for just one, okay? You've got county, you've got state, and you have other organizations that work with the county and the state. But I guess I'd like to ask Ms. Kajorek for her input in regards to, you don't get to reapply if you've been denied right away. And is that correct?
Ms. Kajorek?
Thank you, Chair Howard, Representative. Yes, so if the county denies your application, they're not going to do a whole long process. They're just going to deny you right away again. So this concern of, you know, there's a long, you know, application process where they're really taking a look at things, they decide no, that's not going to happen over and over and over again. If the answer is no, it's going to be no moving forward.
Representative Nash.
Super fast, because since we have to get to session, I'm just saying if we could tighten it up and say that upon denial of the application, another one may not be filed. They know that they've been denied, but if they just want to game the system, and people do, we see people gaming the system all the time, that just by simply filing an application that they know is going to be denied, it doesn't then forestall this again. I'm with you, but I'm just asking for some guardrails to be put into this so that we do see people game the system. It happens all over the world. I'm just trying to make sure that we don't allow by a well-intended piece of legislation to say that if somebody knows they've been denied, they just don't simply drop another application and say, well, I'm going to buy myself some extra time.
Chairman.
Representative Perez Vega.
Representative Nash, this bill isn't to secure the gaming. This is a commitment between tenant and landlord. And so I don't see that as being an issue to add if already the county and the state and the city services are not going to allow you to reapply. That would mean that they would have to face, you know, breaking their commitment in that contract with that landlord. I don't think it's necessary.
This bill is going to be laid over, but just a quick final comment, Representative Perez Vega.
Yes. Thank you, members of the committee who are in support of this. This issue of homelessness is deeply, deeply real in our state, and it is heavily affected due to the evictions and not being able to provide services to folks that deserve the extra time and help and assistance. This isn't just an issue that's happening in my district, in the Twin Cities, in the metro area. This is happening in greater Minnesota. I've seen it through my work in touring. I've heard from folks from both sides of the aisle on how we have to work on this issue of homelessness, and evictions is one of the bullets that is striking as to why we have homelessness in the state of Minnesota. So I look forward to working more on 602, and I want to give thanks to our legal aid here with Mrs. Mary Kajorik for her services. Gracias.
Thank you, Representative. So I will renew my motion that House Bill 602, as amended, be laid over for possible inclusion in an omnibus bill. And with that, the bill is laid over. And with that, I want to thank our members and our testifiers for their conversation and testimony today. And with that, we are adjourned.